Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, September 16th, 2013. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. U.S. Senator Jim Risch of Idaho says he will try to revive proposed Upper Lhoksaw land exchange. Avista asks for 9.4% natural gas rate increase for residential customers in Washington State, and questions arise over 501c3 nonprofit Idaho Freedom Foundation's extensive lobbying. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Avista Utilities announced today they will ask Washington state regulators to increase residential natural gas rates in the state by 9.4% starting November 1st. The utility is also asking to increase residential and small farm electricity rates by 2.1%. Company officials say they want higher wholesale costs passed on to customers. A similar Avista rate increase request is pending before Idaho regulators. The Washington Department of Agriculture announced Friday small levels of genetically modified genes were found in alfalfa grown on an eastern Washington farm. The agency says the tests were requested after a hay farmer who did not want a GMO crop had his alfalfa rejected by a broker because of evidence of Roundup-ready genes invented by Monsanto in the crop. The federal government has already approved Roundup Ready alfalfa for outdoor growing and animal feed. Democratic State Senator Marilyn Chase of Shoreline told the Associated Press, "Our state's farmers are becoming collateral damage to the reckless practices of the agriculture industry in this country. More than 60 of our trade partners throughout the world have bans on the import of unlabeled GMO foods." State Department of Agriculture spokesperson Mike Louisel said the farmer contacted the agency in late August and the tests were conducted earlier this month. U.S. Senator Jim Risch of Idaho says he is determined to use his experience hammering through the Idaho roadless rule when he was interim governor to get all the parties in the Lhoksaw land exchange to come to the table to produce some kind of agreement about the controversial proposed land swap. The land exchange idea came into being in 2005 when billionaire Timothy Blixeth purchased 40,000 acres of logged over land near the headwaters of the Lhoksaw River, which he then proposed to swap for up to 18,000 acres of U.S. Forest Service land in several northern Idaho counties. Blixeth owns one-third interest in Western Pacific Timber, which is the owner of the checkerboard pattern land along the Bitterroot Divide near the Montana state line that would be traded. Some Latah County residents oppose the swap because it could result in the loss of nearby national forest lands and recreation opportunities. Idaho County commissioners voiced opposition because the trade would erode the county's tax base because it would place the checkerboarded land owned by Western Pacific Timber in the hands of the U.S. government, and the county can't tax federal land within its borders. The Idaho County Commissioners therefore favored an acre-for-acre swap within the county, but anything other than a value-for-value swap has to be approved by an act of Congress. Even though all talks about the land exchange eventually broke down, the Forest Service continues to work on an environmental impact statement, so the administrative part of a trade wouldn't hold up an exchange if parties were to come to an agreement. Risch told the Lewiston Tribune he envisions a collaborative process that would involve public meetings and legislative hearings, and denied the possibility of, quote, something in the dark of night slipped in at midnight on Christmas Eve. Risch's revival of the exchange could face an uphill battle among environmentalists. Marilyn Beckett of the Friends of the Palouse Ranger District wrote Risch, quote, "If the Forest Service failed to convince the public through public meetings, public outreach, and two voluminous environmental impact statements, what has created the need to do this legislatively. Friends of the Clearwater Director Gary McFarlane, Idaho Conservation League spokesperson Jonathan Oppenheimer, and Scott Stouter of Trout Unlimited all affirmed that the land in the upper Lockshaw is valuable for the middle fork of the Clearwater drainage and suggested looking for new options, including the possibility of outright purchase by the federal government rather than trying to drum up new support for options that have already been rejected. U.S. bankruptcy judge William Thurman in Nevada stopped proceedings Friday on billionaire Tim Blixseth's attempt to recover $3.3 million in attorney costs stemming from Montana's attempt to force him into bankruptcy. Blixseth's exclusive Yellowstone Club in Montana, which only counted millionaires among its members, went into bankruptcy in 2008, and Blixseth himself put most of his assets into the hands of a Nevada trust, which prevented creditors and the state of Montana from accessing the money. Montana tax officials want Blixseth to pay $57 million in back taxes. Blixseth, who is a Washington state resident, has one-third ownership in Western Pacific Timber, which wants to exchange up to 40,000 acres of its land on the Bitterroot Divide for Forest Service land elsewhere in northern Idaho. It appears the eight Nez Perce Tribe Executive Committee members who were arrested for standing in the roadway and blocking the General Electric Megalode at their reservation boundary August 6th will get to stay on the Executive Committee if convicted. The eight, along with 20 other tribal members, are being charged with public nuisance violations, which are civil infractions rather than criminal infractions under Nez Perce Tribal Code. The tribal constitution says executive committee members charged with a criminal offense are automatically removed from the governing body. Some Idaho lawmakers and government watchdogs are questioning whether the activities of the Idaho Freedom Foundation constitute education or lobbying. The Idaho Freedom Foundation is a 501c3 nonprofit, which means only a small portion of its activities can be devoted to lobbying. Idaho Freedom Foundation president and founder Wayne Hoffman told the Spokesman Review, "We're an education organization. Our biggest focus is the education of policymakers." At the organization's annual fundraising event, Hoffman touted the foundation's seven major accomplishments since its founding 5 years ago, and all seven involved writing, passing, promoting, or blocking legislation in the Idaho legislature. National nonprofit tax law expert Lloyd Mayer from the University of Notre Dame told the paper, "I think there's a serious yellow flag here." Because the Idaho Freedom Foundation is registered as a 501c3 nonprofit organization, it doesn't have to disclose its donors, who receive a maximum tax break for their donations. The Idaho Association of Commerce and Industry, a long-standing lobbying group playing a similar role in the Idaho legislative process, is a 501c6 organization, a designation that allows unlimited lobbying. As such, donations are not tax deductible. Other organizations, such as the Catholic Charities and the Idaho Conservation League, who are both 501c3s, also engage in lobbying, but for each of those, the lobbying effort is a small part of their total activities and budget. The Catholic Charities also offers counseling services, after-school programs, and other social ministry activities. The Idaho Conservation League spends about a fifth of its $1.55 million annual budget on lobbying. ICL Executive Director Rick Johnson told the paper the organization does employ three people registered as lobbyists, and they engage in lobbying activity occasionally and only on issues related to the conservation organization's mission. To keep the activity separate, some ICL founders established a separate 502c4 organization that would focus on lobbying and participate in political campaigns. Some Idaho legislators were surprised to hear that the Idaho Freedom Foundation was claiming to be a nonprofit education organization. Democrat Cherie Buckner Webb of Boise told the Spokesman Review she was taken aback, Buckner-Webb said from her perspective, which she calls broad-minded, the group focuses on conservative legislation generally and holds conservative legislators accountable for their votes, adding, they are visible in every committee room I serve in. While Hoffman contends that even Idaho Freedom Foundation robocalls against a Shoshone County ballot measure to form a new urban renewal agency were merely educational, tax expert Meyer disagreed, noting, quote, a communication can be both educational and lobbying. The terms are not mutually exclusive. In the wake of public pressure to lower the Montana wolf population, the state's general season on wolves opened today with lowered licensing fees, a 5-animal-per-person kill limit, and a longer season. Only areas near Glacier and Yellowstone National Parks have quotas on the number of wolves that can be taken from the area. Conservation groups say the expanded season is a threat to the long-term wolf population, while livestock owners praise the reduction in the number of wolves statewide. At the beginning of 2013, Montana was believed to have 625 wolves. A total of 225 wolves were killed last year, 128 by rifle hunters and 97 by trappers. Democratic State Senator Brandon Durst of Boise told KTVB-TV in Boise that although most of his possessions have been removed from his family's Boise home, he still spends 50% of his time in Idaho. Durst's wife is employed as a teacher in the Seattle area. The Idaho legislature only has residency rules governing who can run for office. Once a legislator takes office, no residency rules apply, so no action could be taken against Durst, even if he lived full-time in Seattle with his wife. Environmental Protection Agency officials say a cylinder of depleted uranium found in some salvaged metal in a Craigmont building posed no threat to the public. The owner of the Thompson Chemical Company told investigators he didn't know where the box of metal containing the cylinder came from, but its former owner had done salvage work at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation. EPA spokesperson Greg Weigel said the cylinder was not highly radioactive, but needed to be properly disposed of. Idaho Falls joined 6 other Idaho cities last week in passing a local ordinance banning discrimination in housing and employment on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. Unlike the ordinances in other Idaho cities, the Idaho Falls law does not ban discrimination in public accommodation. The Idaho legislature has resisted outlawing sexual orientation and gender identity as a basis for discrimination in housing, employment, and public accommodation. Idaho's Human Rights Act only bars discrimination based on race, religion, gender, or disability. At a recent state central committee meeting, Idaho Republicans voted to support a resolution which calls upon Republicans in the legislature to pass a bill that would overturn local non-discrimination ordinances, a move which Governor C.L. Butch Otter said he would oppose. The coordinator of a program intended to improve high-speed internet throughout the state reported to an interim Idaho Legislative Committee Friday that once you get past 3 miles from an urban area, broadband internet access gets pretty iffy. Mike Field of the Link Idaho Project told the committee, service is the most spotty in the Idaho Panhandle. Link Idaho Project consultant Bill Gillis estimated it would cost $173 million to construct a broadband service that would reach all of Idaho and another $41 million per year to administer it. The Link Idaho Project is planning a summit meeting on the broadband issue October 22nd. The Moscow City Council tonight will consider the Farmers Market Commission's recommendation to relocate the Saturday Farmers Market to the Jackson Street parking lot during the University of Idaho's homecoming parade on September 28th. The city council will also be asked to approve the renewal of the city's current employee health insurance program for a modified term of 21 months with a rate increase of 5.9%. The term of the insurance program will be from November 1st of this year to July 31st, 2015. Another item on tonight's agenda is the Hatley Way sidewalk improvements. The council will be asked to accept the low bid of $49,600 from Curtis Concrete Construction Incorporated to connect a sidewalk at the Palouse Mall to the sidewalk near the U-Haul store on the west side of Moscow. The contract also calls for construction of concrete stairs at the west end of the mall sidewalk to Hatley Way and replacing three non-ADA compliant pedestrian ramps on Hatley Way with new curb and sidewalk and building a new vehicle approach. The Moscow City Council will also hear a report on the Historic Preservation Commission from City Planner Mark Ray. Tonight's Moscow City Council meeting begins at 7 p.m. at City Hall. Well, that's it for the KRFP evening report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, there is a mostly clear skies tonight, low 49, with wind gusts up to 20 miles an hour from the west, sustained winds 10 to 15, becoming light overnight, and a 60% chance of showers tomorrow afternoon, with a slight chance of showers in the morning, possibly a thunderstorm afternoon as well, mostly cloudy, high 66, 60% chance of showers, and possibly a thunderstorm before midnight Tuesday night, then a chance of showers, mostly cloudy, low 45, a 20% chance of showers before noon Wednesday, partly sunny, high 64, partly cloudy Wednesday night, low 44, and mostly sunny Thursday and Friday with highs of 73 Thursday and 79 on Friday with a low of 48 on Thursday night. Currently, we have 70 degrees under fair skies in Moscow. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, Eat the Airwaves, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine. Actually, there'll be a show between Eat the Airwaves and Flashpoints. Eat the Airwaves is a shorter version this week because of fundraising at the home station. After Flashpoints, around 7:30, we will have Climate Justice Forum live in the studios, hosted by Helen Yost, and that'll go 7:30 till 9:30 or 10, and then music through the evening. Retro Rick will be in. That's all here at KRFP Moscow. I'm Lee Robartis. Nancy Casey assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant good night, and if you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or go to the Radio Free Moscow website, krfp.org or radiofreemoscow.com to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow, including with our Full Power campaign, Step Up to Full Power, where we're going to put a transmitter up on Paradise Ridge and expand eventually to a full 1,100 watts after we meet an FCC deadline this fall. Well, have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow.